Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio, your feel-good radio. I'm your host Jasmine, and today we will be being joined by a Friends of the Earth senior scientist, Kendra Klein, who talks about a new paper that was published alongside the Centre for Biological Diversity and University of Maryland. It's a study that shows how pesticides can widely affect soil organisms, and it's critical to soil health, biodiversity, and soil carbon secretion or carbon capture, which is currently at the forefront of the conversation to tackle climate change. In this study, they found that in 70.5% of cases studied, pesticides kill or harm soil invertebrates, including earthworms, ants, beetles, ground nesting beetles, and many more. Soil health is so important because it's the bottom of the food chain and the very premise of where life begins. It's the cornerstone of life on Earth. It's water filtration, it gives nutrients, and it's a habitat for billions of organisms that make up a very diverse ecosystem. When soil is healthy, it supplies humans with antibiotics that fight disease, it provides nutrients that feeds our crops, and its self-sustaining cycle can regenerate for decades. Healthy soil helps to mitigate climate change by acting as a carbon sink. And this means it stores vast quantities of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases that would otherwise be released into the atmosphere. Soil is actually the second largest carbon sink after the ocean, capturing more CO2 than forests and holding three times more carbon than the Earth's atmosphere. And although planting trees are so important, they wouldn't be there if it wasn't for healthy soils. And I think that this is something that's becoming more of something we're aware of. And I'm going to hand over now to Kendra Klein, who is going to tell us more about her study and why healthy soil is so important.
I'm Kendra Klein. I am a senior scientist on the food and agriculture team at Friends of the Earth US.
Welcome to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So I understand you're doing lots of interesting studies at the moment, and you always seem to have new, fresh, interesting studies out. But this one in particular is a very big one in terms of understanding what pesticides do to soil health. So can you just tell me a little bit about what that study showed and why you decided as Friends of the Earth to go into it?
This study is the first comprehensive review of the impact of pesticides on soil invertebrates. So that means earthworms, ants, beetles, mites, all of those creatures that make healthy soil. And it's actually the largest review of the impact of pesticides on soil organisms. There was another really important review that looked at the smaller microorganisms, bacteria and fungi. And when you take the results of these two very comprehensive reviews together, you get a very clear picture that pesticides are, as a set of chemical poisons, incompatible with healthy soil ecosystems. We found that in 71% of cases analyzed, pesticides either killed or significantly harmed soil invertebrates. It can undermine their reproduction and growth. It can disrupt their feeding processes, biochemical and structural changes in the organisms themselves, and can disrupt the balance within that soil ecosystem of which species flourish and which are being harmed.
And I'm surprised that it's one of the biggest studies done on this particular topic, because soil plays such an important role in our ecosystem. Is this an area of research that is kind of a grey area? Is it not something that we've been given enough time to over, I don't know, and I guess we're beginning to understand how important it is, but why is this not being talked about so much, and why are pesticides becoming more toxic despite knowing how important it is to keep good soils healthy?
Yes.
Sorry, so that was like three questions. I wrote into one.
No, we've got a lot of ground to cover. So we, in our analysis, looked at 394 studies. So there is research out there, but people haven't taken the time to really pull that together and look at the themes across the research. And so that's what we were able to do. I think, you know, also what we saw is that it was across types of pesticides. That word pesticide encompasses herbicides, insecticides, fungicides. We saw impacts from all of them and across the classes of pesticides. So neonicotinoids, organophosphates, glyphosate, all different types of pesticides showed harm. And I think it's a great question. Why haven't people been talking more about this? And it was one of our motivations to do this study, because there is a real surge of interest in soil health. I think it's become much more a national, international conversation. And a lot of that, I think, is driven by the idea that we can sequester carbon in the soil. And so people have become excited about the possibility of soil as part of the climate solution. And our goal is to say, in all of those conversations, we need to be talking about pesticide reduction. It's absolutely critical, because the capacity of soil to sequester carbon is rooted in its aliveness. Mm. It's the living organisms in the soil that undertake that process of carbon conversion. Plants breathe in carbon and they exude it through their roots because of the relationship they have with living microorganisms. Vertebrates, which we looked at in this study, are the ecosystem engineers. They are building the tunnels and burrows that create soil structure, that allow it to, you know, allow water to flow, nutrients, carbon. And also invertebrates are responsible for breaking down plants. And plants are embodied carbon. And so they are breaking down those plants and returning that carbon into the soil. And so if we want to talk about this exciting idea of soil carbon sequestration, we're talking about life. Mm-hmm. And so pesticides are chemicals that are designed to kill. That's the nature of the chemicals. And so it should be a surprise to nobody that pesticides harm soil life and therefore disrupt or undermine the process of carbon conversion. And of course, this is so much bigger than just carbon. Mm. We're talking about the basis of life on Earth. We are talking about the basis of our food systems. Our ability to continue to feed ourselves depends on healthy soil. And the vast majority of food we eat comes from the soil. And I'll pause there, I guess, in case you can.
I've had like questions popping up, and yeah, it kind of just sparked my interest when you said there's been smaller studies done on fungi, and that is also a massive part of the ecosystem within the soil. So Can you tell me more about that and how pesticides, I'm not sure if this was part of the study, but how pesticides might impact fungi health and mycorrhizal networks within the soil that support all of the plants above soil. So how can it also impact fungi as well as insects and very important creatures that live in the soil?
Yeah, so one of the types of pesticides that we commonly use are fungicides. These are chemicals designed.
Kind of in the design, isn't it?
Right, right. So that's very concerning given that, you know, healthy soil depends on that relationship between fungi and plants. We know that there's a fungal microbial bridge between plants and soil that, you know, is a part of that carbon conversion and also part of the nutrient uptake of plants, converting the nutrients in the soil into a plant available form. And we know based on the research that pesticides can disrupt that bridge. Glyphosate, for example, is a very commonly used herbicide, the most commonly used worldwide. And data show that it can disrupt that microbial bridge. This is concerning given that glyphosate is one of the chemicals used as part of no-till agriculture. Mm. And so, you know, people have become excited about the possibilities of no-till agriculture because it disrupts the soil less because you're not plowing. And yet, typically, that goes hand in hand with increased use of herbicides rather than tilling those plants under at the end of the season. Farmers are burning them down with herbicides. And so this is the whole picture. We need to be talking about that use of pesticides in no-till agriculture and other conservation agriculture practices. And, you know, how does that all balance out in the end or not, right? We're pursuing some very important and good actions. And yet if that's going hand in hand with problematic chemicals, then we need to step back and figure out a better way forward. And there are farmers doing that. There are organic farmers and other agroecological farmers who are figuring out how to reduce tillage and not use harmful chemicals to do that. There are so many ecological farming practices that really point us towards the future of agriculture.
So I'm just wondering why, if so many alternatives are available out there and we're becoming more aware of the harmful effect of these pesticides that we're using, why it says here in the study that pesticide toxicity has more than doubled for many invertebrates since 2005. Why is that happening?
Yes. So that statistic is specifically looking at insecticides. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that although we're using per pound fewer amounts of insecticides, we have started using different classes of insecticides that are far more highly toxic to insects. And this is a double-edged sword because the reason we shifted in part to a newer class called neonicotinoids or neonics is because some of the older insecticides are so highly toxic to people. Organophosphates in particular, which are neurotoxins, they're associated with reduced IQ in children, Alzheimer's, autism, Parkinson's. And so part of the impetus to shift towards greater use of neonics was to move away from pesticides that are highly toxic to people. But this is a catch-22 because neonics are so acutely toxic to insect life. Some of them are 1,000 times more toxic to insects than the infamous pesticide DDT and do not readily break down in the environment. They build up compounding toxicity because they can stay in the water, in the soil for months or even years. And so another study that I was a co-author on a couple of years ago, found that in the U.S. context, U.S. agricultural systems have become 48 times more toxic to insect life since we began using neonics in the 1990s. And so this really points to the fact that we can't find pesticide solutions to pesticide problems. Get off the pesticide treadmill entirely. And we do have now decades of research showing that agroecological farming methods work and that this is where we need to be going. So why are we not going there? That's a large and complicated question. There are many reasons, one of which is the power of the pesticide industry. You know, I think that people are generally aware of the power of the tobacco industry to keep their products on the market despite robust science saying that they're harmful. People are also aware of consumer product chemicals and the fact that even though we know that certain chemicals are harmful, they're still showing up in our beauty care products or our packaging. But I think people are less aware that the same thing is happening with pesticides, that we have mountains of data showing that these chemicals are harmful to our health, are harmful to ecosystems and to the future of farming. And yet the pesticide industry is so strong and has so much political and economic might that it is able to, you know, keep its products on the market and really keep farmers hooked on these poisons.
Yeah. And it surprised me as well to see that there's not much safeguarding going on here, and not just for ourselves, but also for the environment. And even though I guess it says here as well about the study that the soil organisms are not accounted for in the EPA risk assessment. So the Environmental Protection Agency's risk assessment does not take into account soil organisms, which I found so surprising because, you know, we have so many insects that put their larvae in the soil or live or sleep in the soil or hibernate. What kind of soil organisms are we talking about here, and why is it not accounted for in the EPA risk assessment?
Yes, it's particularly perverse that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency not only doesn't include any soil organisms in risk assessments before approving pesticides for use, but the one organism it does use is the European honeybee, which is the only terrestrial invertebrate. And certainly it's not one whose life depends on the soil. You know, honeybees may go their whole lives without coming in contact with the soil. And so the types of mitigation measures that are used to potentially reduce the harm of use of pesticides are geared towards the honeybee and may actually increase the exposure of soil organisms to those pesticides. For example, by increasing droplet size of pesticides so that they drop, you know, we're decreasing the drift in the air, which is very important, not only for honeybees, but also for people. But that is increasing the deposition of pesticides in the soil. So again, we need to move away from pesticide-intensive agriculture rather than sort of put Band-Aids on the system as it is. So our co-authors on this paper at Center for Biological Diversity have really been motivated by this problem that the EPA is not taking into account soil health. And they are petitioning the EPA to change that and looking to the European Food Safety Authority as an example of an agency that is taking into account soil health. And so, you know, impacts on earthworms, springtails, mites, looking at impacts on fungi and also nitrogen transformation are all ways to have data points as part of the pesticide risk assessment process that give us a better picture of pesticide impacts on the soil.
Yeah, it seems like the people that are putting these policies in place, don't have much of an understanding about the biological scientific kind of standpoint, because they say about 25% of all living species on the planet come from the soil. So if we're not taking into account, we're missing a quarter of the planet species. And I just think, yeah, that's very telling of how we're actually how this is being kind of safeguarded and processed, and how the EPA aren't really doing what they should be doing.
It reminds me a bit of, you know, in decades past, where the oceans just felt like a mystery and so expansive that we could just dump our toxic waste and it would disappear. Mm-hmm. And soils are also a bit of a mystery to us. These are dark ecosystems beneath our feet that we actually know very little about. And hopefully, as we come to understand those ecosystems better, we will take much better care. So I do think part of it is a lack of understanding, and that is something that can be solved for. Mm. More cynically, that the pesticide industry has a real interest in us not making those connections. You know, the evidence is mounting in terms of pesticide impacts on soil, on human health. And, you know, they're really up against the wall in many ways. And so what we've seen time and again is that they've got great resources to confound the science, to produce their own science, to, you know, question the validity of the science that is there. And we've not yet seen that pushback on this study, but we certainly have with previous studies, particularly in relation to pesticides and human health.
Yeah. And what kind of social impact are we seeing here? With some people might be thinking, well, it's just going into the ground. But I guess that then has a massive knock-on effect if it's being rain washed away into the rivers and then it ends up in the water. And now I'm just saying this, I'm actually thinking that what kind of effect could this have on aquatic life? And
yes,
and yeah, how far does this damage spread?
So if we just take the class of pesticides known as neonics, these are systemic, and that means that they are taken up into the bodies of plants, into the flowers, into the fruits. And so when we eat food that was grown with neonics, those residues are inside the food itself. They cannot be washed off. And we know that, due to government testing, we know that neonic residues show up on food routinely. And we also know that neonics are contaminating drinking water sources. Very concerningly, a study came out a couple years ago showing that through the purification process of water, the breakdown products of those neonics actually can be far more toxic to human health than the neonics themselves. Mm. So this is not a problem that we can easily solve for. You know, you can't put the chemicals into the system at the field and, you know, then just clean them out before we send the drinking water out to people. This is, you know, pesticides, I think, really highlight the interbeingness of all life. This is something that we are putting out into the environment, and time and again, it's coming back into our own bodies and really reminding us that we are the environment. We're the environment that we eat and drink and breathe, and pesticides travel all of those pathways into our own bodies. So certainly there are impacts across the system. Neonics as well, because of their persistence, often end up in aquatic systems and are highly toxic to aquatic invertebrates as well. And then that has knock-on effects up the ecosystem, because if you're knocking out the invertebrates, then the fish that feed on those insects are also suffering the impacts of reduced food sources. Likewise, on land, the birds that feed on insects are really suffering because of the declining insect populations. And pesticides are one of the key drivers of those declines in insect populations. That is what this study is, you know, confirming in relation to the soil. It's like, yet again, here's more evidence that pesticides are major drivers of insect declines.
Absolutely. And the knock-on effect is almost like, well, it's like what you say, what we're putting out into the earth is eventually coming back to us because we're part of this ecosystem. And it seems that a lot of big pesticide corporations have a really good way of greenwashing their products. And by that, I mean putting slants on things to make them seem more ecological or more earth-friendly. And is this something that you think influences consumers to think that they might not be having as bad as an effect as they are? And by consumers, I guess I'm talking particularly about farmers.
Yeah, so what we are seeing is that all of the major pesticide companies are trying to ride the momentum around soil health and claim that, in the words of Bayer, who of course now owns Monsanto, with the right practices and products, farmers can be a part of the climate solution. Well, those practices and products they mean are theirs. Their proprietary seeds, their pesticides. And this is really, you know, takes us back to no-till agriculture, and that is the intersection. I think that these companies are perceiving that there is a continued market for them the more farmers move to no-till agriculture, because so often it depends on using herbicides to burn down those crops. And we see that Bayer already has a Bayer Carbon Initiative, where they are seeking to engage farmers under the idea that they will be, you know, part of climate solutions, that they will be building healthy soil. But to participate, you are taking direction and directive from Bayer in terms of what practices you need to implement in order to get compensated for, you know, sequestering carbon, which I hesitate to say, because that's also a very difficult thing to measure. We know that soil sequesters carbon, and yet measuring it in an accurate enough way from field to field, from season to season, to truly being able to have integrity in a carbon market. And that's really what Bayer is interested in, is a soil carbon market. They stand to win big. You know, on one hand, the farmers are locked into a system with them where they're using their products and paying for their products. And then Bayer can, you know, compensate farmers for sequestering carbon and sell those credits to polluters and allow polluters to keep polluting. And so what we've seen in the U.S. is that Bayer, Syngenta, and other major players like ADM and Cargill are really getting behind soil carbon markets. They are vocal advocates of a bill that has been introduced to Congress here that would channel all of this important interest in soil health into soil carbon markets, which for so many reasons is the wrong way to go. Got years of data showing us that carbon markets don't even achieve their primary goal, which is reducing carbon and greenhouse gas emissions. So I think that we are already seeing, and I'm sure we'll see more of these pesticide companies trying to paint themselves as a part of climate smart agriculture, as a part of the soil health solution. And that's why this study, this data is so important to really shatter that notion that pesticides can be a part of healthy soil ecosystems. What this data shows us is that they absolutely cannot.
Absolutely. And it's just, I mean, you just have to look at their websites to see how much they really do just put this idea, like this whole image of themselves out there as very green and saving the environment. And I mean, you even see it with oil companies nowadays, which is just ridiculous. I feel like we're at a point now of half of the world's soil is degraded, which I think just goes to show how much of an emergency it is that we change the way that we're farming quite rapidly. And if we don't, I mean, I can't even imagine what a world would look like without good soil. And what would that mean for food security? And I mean, for surviving harsher and harsher weather patterns. And it's already showing in lots of parts of the world how soil health is so important for food security as well. I guess I'm just trying to understand how, if half of the world's soil is already degraded, what would it take for farmers to replenish the soil if they've already been doing everything as like using pesticides and tilling and whatnot? Is there a way that they can change that, or is it too late?
Well, I can't speak to whether it's too late or not.
Good question.
Yes, it remains to be seen. We do know how to farm in relation to ecological systems mm-hmm. in a healthier way. We have examples and data that point us towards agroecological farming as a solution that can actually replenish soil resources. So this is, I think, the term regenerative has really gained momentum. The idea that we need to not just sustain, right? We're moving past sustainability where we are aiming to maintain a resource at some level, towards the idea that we can regenerate, we can replenish important resources like the soil. And we have leading farmers who are showing us the way, who are actually building soil on their farms and doing so much faster than a natural process could, you know, in an undisturbed ecosystem. So that is possible. And I guess the question is, on what scale and what would it take to support all farmers to move in that direction? And it would be a massive societal effort, and we would need government policy to really flip on its head. Right now in the United States, we are spending billions of federal dollars to uphold a pesticide intensive agricultural system. Mm. And we really would need to reinvest in the way we're supporting farmers and be paying them and supporting them to practice conservation agriculture, to implement those practices we know can not just sustain, but replenish the soil. So that is theoretically possible. I don't know that it's politically possible, you know, and the pesticide industry holds so much sway. And just ideology, you know, runs against that thinking, dominant ideology. So it's an interesting challenge. I mean, not interesting, but maybe terrifying challenge that we are up against in so many ways environmentally, that we have solutions that we could pursue, and we don't pursue them as rapidly as we need to.
But it's definitely happening, though. As you said, the word regeneration is starting to really become, it's gaining momentum for sure. And I think it's even just starting with our attitudes around soil. Like, times some people refer to it as dirt, and it's like crazy because it's not, it's so nutritious, it's so good. And it's just, yeah, maybe our mentality as well towards soil. So it's just something that's always under our feet, and maybe we don't even think about half of the amount of life and carbon and whatnot that remains locked inside of it. So yeah, it's been really great to have you on the show today. Is there anything that I can, that you'd like to add, let listeners know?
I would say on the topic of regeneration, this is where we need to be very careful about how we move forward, because pesticide companies would like nothing more than for a definition of regenerative agriculture to take hold that does not include pesticide reduction. Organic farmers are the original regenerative farmers. All of the same practices that we're talking about in regenerative agriculture, composting, crop rotations, cover cropping, crop diversification, are the basis of why organic farming works. And that organic legal definition prohibits the use of over 900 different pesticides that are otherwise allowed in agriculture. So there's concern that so much of the energy behind soil health is shifting towards regenerative agriculture, which has yet to be defined in any official way. And there are, you know, as we see that play out, I think that this study, as well as the many others that are out there about the harms of pesticides, really need to be a part of that conversation. We need to ensure that our discussions about regenerative agriculture, our definitions of what it means and how we put it into practice, really include the reduction of the use of toxic pesticides, not only for the soil, but for all other organisms in farming ecosystems, for aquatic ecosystems, and of course, for our own health.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kendra, once again for joining us on the Environment and Conservation Show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Really such a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for the opportunity to get some of this information out to people.
Thank you, everyone. You have been listening to the Environment and Conservation Show with me, Yasmin, on UK Health Radio. Please feel free to connect further. If you wish to connect further, please feel free to visit my website, earthwitness.news, where you can find out more stories about the natural world. So I look forward to connecting with you if you wish, and have a nice day. Thanks for listening again. Bye for now.